Welcome back to the studio, to the station and the show. I'm Alan Hirsch, and Mike Mercurio from Offutt Kerman is my guest. We're talking about exit strategy. So before we went to the break, we were talking about some of the issues about it's not just about selling a business, but there are all kinds of issues that you have to deal with. And we were talking about in any of those, you have to figure out what the value of the business is. So why don't you talk a little bit about how you go about getting a value for your business?
Well, you know, there's informal ways to value the business and there's formal ways to value the business. So when people think about valuations, many times they think about, well, I have to go and engage a formal valuation shop and go through what some would call a painful process of disclosure, and it takes some time and it costs some money, and then I get this big gigantic report that tells me what a business is worth. And those are needed sometimes, because if you're going to transition part of your business or make gifts, for example, to family members, you got to be able to properly account for the valuation that you may be transferring, because the IRS wants to know what's being moved back and forth for tax purposes. Taxes drive things. But what I'm talking about is a more informal version of a valuation. I'm saying that if you're a business owner, some of the most important people you should have a relationship with, in addition to your attorney, of course, is the accountant. You should have an accountant, because getting your books and records together and on a pace so that you have real true forecasting and the ability to really start to develop a plan, financial plan for your business, you should have that accountant in place. And so most accountants can give you a back of the napkin, an indication of value. Because again, going back to where we started, if you don't know what your business is worth and you have a false number in your head, you can't drive to where you want to conclude to. And so getting that indication, even if it's not perfect down to the penny, but good enough standard will get you a far way towards having, you know, do you go left? Do you go right? Am I on track? Am I off track?
So you can go and look at your accountant or talk to your accountant, and they can give you a good idea of what it's worth.
I think so.
In a certain range. Most good accountants, if you're with a small firm, might not be as easy, but most of the mid-size and bigger firms, they have someone that's a valuation expert that they can just turn over your financials to, and they'll take a look at it and give you a reasonable guess at what the value is without the high price of formal valuations.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can give you an indication of value, and that's all we want here. We want to know, are we $2 million or are we $200,000, going back to my earlier example? Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're way off track now and you have a five-year plan, or you say, listen, Mike, I want to exit in 5 years or 2 years, and you say, and I really need $2 million to exit, and we're at $200,000, well, we got to make some changes and we got to figure out a real plan right away to get you to where you need to be. We got to ad lib.
Right.
So that's the need for valuation.
It's not only ad libbing, it's then taking a real look at the business.
Yeah.
And doing some strategic thinking and strategic planning to figure out how you take your current business from that $200,000 valuation by looking at sales and every aspect of the business, from customers' accounts, your marketing, your sales, your expenses, and trying to build to where you get to that value.
That's right. I think what really can come out of a valuation, you know, in the broadest sense, is to understand what are your value drivers in your business. If you understand what the value drivers are, and, you know, many business owners, or at least some, don't understand what the true value proposition is for their business. But once you understand what the value drivers are, whether they're your people, whether it's your intellectual capital, you have patents, whether it's your process, whether it's your product. But until you understand what your value drivers are, you might struggle a bit. And so evaluation can help identify what your value drivers are.
And I also believe there's to help you determine what those value drivers are, something, and which is why I ask the question of every show, every guest, what motivates you to get up in the morning and go to work? It's the same thing. What motivates you as a business owner to go to work, and what motivates you and your business to do what it does? Don't know why you're doing what you do in your business, you can't be in a position, one, to motivate other people in your own company to feel they want to work for you, because there's no enthusiasm from you, so there's no enthusiasm from them. And how do you get customers to buy your product when you're not enthusiastic and passionate about what you're doing?
That's right. You have to know what your value drivers are. And then once you know them, you can build a plan to enhance them. and of course protect them. So that's where lawyers come in. And we want to protect those. We don't want rogue employees to steal customers, for example. We have a great customer list, or processes, or other employees. So when you know what your value drivers are, you can build a plan to enhance them as well as protect them.
Absolutely. And that's what intellectual property law is all about. And it's not just about copyrights, trademarks, and patents. It goes much broader, as you said. Just want to remind everybody, I'm Alan Hirsch, and this is Alan Hirsch from Alan Hirsch Advisors, and I'm talking to Mike Mercurio here in the studio, and we're talking about exit planning. If anybody has a question or a comment, give us a call. We'll try to work it out. There are some technical difficulties right now in the studio, but we'll try to work it out with the phone call. So please give us a call if you're listening. So let's take the next step. We talked about, and we actually talked at the break, you talked about the idea of someone that owns 100% of the business, So what kind of exit strategy does he have?
Well, you know, in closely held businesses, and many of my clients, which are entrepreneurial driven, the ownership class is generally limited. So, you know, it may be one owner many times. It may be more than one. But one of the things that I hear frequently when there's a single owner is that, well, I'm the only owner, and I don't have a key employee or a partner who's going to buy me out. So therefore, I throw my arms up in the air. I don't know what exit plan. I don't know what I should do. I'll just, you know, leave it through my will, perhaps, if I have one. And, you know, one of the things that I try to convey to any owner is that, you know, you have a responsibility not only to your family, you know, your spouse and your children, if you have them, to clean up your affairs, but you also have a responsibility to your employees. You know, whether you have 5 employees, 25, 50, 500, these people come in and work hard for you every day, and they expect, and their families expect, that that business is going to continue. And so failure to do an exit plan, or even what I like to say is a contingency plan, is really, I'd say, irresponsible. To leave your estate is irresponsible for your family, and to leave your business a mess is irresponsible to your family, but also to your employees and your key personnel.
I agree. And in working with my clients, I talk about, you know, delegating. And one of the things, you know, as the businesses grow beyond their infancy, hire people that are smarter than you, that are better than you, because you learn more from smarter people. And if you have a business and you're the only owner and you don't have people that you don't think you can turn it over to, then you're not leading properly. You're not managing. You should be able to bring in somebody who is smart. No guarantees that they're going to take it over, but they're smart, they're capable, that if something happened to you, they could step in and run it for you.
Well, you know, Alan, that's a great point. And one of the reasons why I think people don't do that is because, you know, when you're an owner of a business, there's a bit of an ego there. And you have to have a little bit of an ego and a little bit of a pride because, you know, to be an entrepreneur, you have to have that swagger to take that risk. That's a mindset. But what comes along with it is somewhat of a trap. You know, you or many owners believe that they're the best at and nobody else can do it better than them. They're the best salesman because they had to be the first salesman in the business. They may be the best technician because they were the only engineer of their business for a period of time. But, you know, in the end, if you want to create a business that's going to last beyond you, it has to transition beyond the owner. The business can't all be about the owner. It has to actually be able to stand on its own. And it'll never stand on its own if the business owner doesn't let go. It's harder, I know, but it needs to happen.
And one of the things very, very quickly talking about delegation and training someone, when you think about it in the sense of an investment. If you bought something, a piece of equipment, and you wanted a 3-year return on investment, you do a calculation. So if you have a job that you're doing 4 hours a week, okay, and it takes 120 hours to train someone to do it, 3 full weeks over a period of 4 or 5 months. Think about the return on investment. You spent 120 hours to save 600 hours. There's a 400% return on that investment of your time. Ultimately, that saves a business money and saves you heartaches and pain. So if you can delegate and think about that delegation as an investment in your time, it makes sense if you look at it as a return on investment. It's just a little nugget about that.